One. Hello and welcome to the Hellas Football Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen, and joining me today is Alec. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, not bad, Steve. Not bad. How are you?
Yes, I'm pretty good. The weather's really nice in the UK now, finally, after months of rain. So looking forward to enjoying that a little bit. What about you?
No, it's beautiful today. I don't know what's happened. Maybe summer's on its way. Who knows?
God, please, I beg. It's still a bit chilly, but overall, it's quite nice. I watched a video recently that said that the most common conversation that Brits have is about the weather. And it's so true. We complain about the weather all the time because it's not always bad, but it can be really horrible sometimes. So
Well, it's never predictable. I think that's why it's a talking point. It's because in some countries, like I teach kids in Dubai, and they just say, "Well, yeah, it's always 30 degrees. I mean, what's there to talk about?" Whereas here, like it could be anything.
Well, I think because of where we're based geographically, we get a lot of winds from the north, like kind of the north. We get winds from kind of the Atlantic, then we get more kind of hot breezes from Europe and kind of even Africa sometimes. So it's just such a like a mess of weather. Either that or it's climate change, but we're not getting into that. We'll get into the Greek football because we're not a weather podcast yet. So we'll start with the playoffs. We don't really need to talk too much about them. We'll just breeze through them. So, Atromitos 1-1 with Panathinaikos in Peristeri. Asteras Tripolis lost 2-1 to Kifisia. So, pretty big result for Kifisia there, actually, who are making their bid to stay up. They are not doing, and Panathinaikos, who are now second from bottom, are in real trouble. Both promoted sides have a chance of staying up, which I didn't think was possible come at the beginning of the season. And as I was saying, Panathinaikos actually lost 1-0 away to Volos. Both teams went down to 10 men in that game. And the big one of the playouts, Offi smashed bottom side Bastianina 4-0 in Crete. So Bastianina also foot of the table, really struggling after having a really, really good campaign last year. Just absolutely looking like they're going to go down, which is a big shame for them. But yeah, that's the playouts. We'll focus more on the playoffs. So, firstly, Lamia hosted Olympiakos, got absolutely spanked 5-1. It was a really entertaining game. We Olympiakos left a few key players behind. David Carmo, Kostas Fortunis, Podence was suspended. There was one or two others, if I recall. We didn't really m miss them in the end. Stefan Jovetic with a goal in the 22nd minute. El Kabi with a penalty in the 26th minute, doubled our lead, and he actually converted it properly this time rather than doing any silly flicks and tricks. Then just before half time and just before the end of the match, Lamia scored two own goals to give us a 4-0 lead. El Arabi, continuing his legendary goal scoring form for the club, came on and scored in the 85th minute. It's been an excellent super sub for us. And Lamia got one back through to Toshio Lake, but it was too little too late. And we actually go within 4 points of first, which is, after me saying we're down and out after losing to AEK, who knows? Let's see. But yeah, overall, a really good performance for Olympiakos, I guess, if we talk about this, because not the most important game in the playoffs, so I'll talk about it briefly. Stefan,
Yeah, I mean,
so
this is the
important.
thing with playoffs. I know we complain about playoffs all the time, but the fact that you've got four teams going for the title in a six-team playoffs means that you're always going to have one match between the big four, which means that whoever's playing Aris or Lamia have got a free run at it, and Olympiakos have made no mistakes against Aris or Lamia. And yeah, now 4 points separating all four top teams, 1 point separating first from second, second from third, third from fourth. I still have absolutely no idea who's going to win it, and I really didn't think by this stage, 30 games in, we'd be talking about a four horse race, but here we are.
And it makes the league more exciting, as we've been saying since the playoffs began. It's really good for Greek football that this kind of competition is given better, more value. Because I've always said I love Olympiakos dominating the league, and I love them winning by whatever, how many stupid points. But overall, it makes the league stronger. It makes the league better. It makes it more league entertaining as well. And the playoffs, it gives validity to them as well, because having the playoffs in the first couple of years where we were still strong enough to more or less breeze it by the end of the regular season, and the playoffs essentially meant nothing. It kind of felt like the playoffs were pointless. Whereas now, because everyone's on a more equal footing, with regards to player quality, and because we've also got a little bit worse over the last couple of years, it has made it really exciting and also really nail biting for individual supporters as well. But yeah, I guess just to quickly highlight players from the game, Stefan Jovetic, oh my goodness, he's man reborn under Mendilibar. He's so important to the team because he almost plays like a second striker or almost like a hybrid number 10 if we're playing like a 4-4-1-1. And El Khabib, well, not really much more to say about him. He's excellent. Omar Richards is a really interesting case because I thought he was just going to come in, be back up to Ortega, get fit for Nottingham Forest, and then go back because we don't have a buyback clause. We don't have a clause to make him permanent. He will go back to Forest at the end of the season, but he's really, really good. And with Ortega injured, I can't remember if Richards is in our European squad. I think he is because I don't think we would have brought one left back. But yeah, if he plays against Fenerbahce on Thursday, he'll be really vital. And also Nelson Abbey as well, who I thought was just going to be in the B team the whole time. For his full time with us, is also really impressed. So really pleased overall, and it was nice to see Andre Horta back as well. So that's the that I mean, if there's any lasting thoughts you want to give Alec before we move on.
I just well, you mentioned Jovetic, and obviously with the Fenerbahce game coming up tomorrow, what would you do with him? Would you because obviously you've got Masuras still there, Andre Horta as well. How do you line up?
That's interesting because Gazzetta released an article a couple of days ago that there it's a good headache for Mendilibar because Podence is suspended, so he won't be playing in that game. So it will either be a 4-3-3 where Horta will be slotted back in with Heze and Chiquinho, and then Masuras and Fortunis will be on the wings with El Khabi up top, or Masuras will be replaced by Jovetic on the wing. I don't really mind if he's put on the wing, but obviously because he's a striker and I have a massive kind of pref, like I would rather him be in the striking position, but he'll probably still play the same role that he did. Or it will be like a kind of sort of lopsided 4-4-2 slash 4-4-1-1 where Jovetic will play kind of just behind or slightly next to El Khabi, and then it'll either be one of the three of midfielders of Chiquinho or Horta or Heze who play in the midfield too, and then Fortunis Masuras on the wing. So it is going to be very interesting. It's a good headache because, like I said, it means that we could potentially be playing anything. We're not as predictable come the game in Biria this Thursday against Fenerbahce, which we will get into a bit more later. But it's exciting and it's good that we have so many strikers in form because even El Arabi, he's ancient now, but he's still scoring when he needs to score. And I think he's very close to breaking. I think he's about to overtake Giovanni for goals
Is he?
for the club overall, if I'm not mistaken. So, yes, very, very pleased with Olympiacos. Glad we didn't slip up against Lamia like we did in the regular season. And we move on to Aris, who lost 2-0 to Panathinaikos. Sporat opened the scoring in the 62nd minute, and then an own goal from Brabec in the 92nd minute gave Panathinaikos the win against Aris. Aris had 23 shots in this game, Alec, overall, 5 shots on target. So outshot Panathinaikos, but Panathinaikos did enough to get this result away in Thessaloniki.
I mean, you look at the scoreline, you think 2-0 easy win for Panathinaikos, but it wasn't like that at all. Aris really gave them a game, especially near the end as well. If anybody looked like they were going to score by the end of the match, it was going to be Aris, and then they concede sort of a freak own goal on the counter. 23 shots. I mean, I Panathinaikos had sort of fame. I know they're not as good defensively as they were last season, but they've still got the best defense in the league. And to concede 23 shots is sort of unheard of for them. I mean, it's a cliche, right? But winning matches when you're not playing well is the sign of champions. But then again, I think you can point to any match that the top four have played this season and go, well, yeah, there you go. So it would have been interesting if Aris would have taken points off them. I mean, Aris have got nothing to play for anymore, which sort of makes it even more
Yeah, in the league,
shocking.
certainly.
Yeah, I mean they're finishing fifth. There's no other way. They've been finishing fifth since the second day of the season. So it's weird that they had such motivation. They're almost like the kingmaker this year. I know Tottenham are sort of playing that role in the Premier League at the moment, where they play obviously all of the top four, and so they can kind of decide when they turn up on who they turn up against. And you might imagine that they'll really try and give Pauk a good go. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how what their role is in the title race.
Yeah, and I think I know Olympiacos supporters were a bit wary of Addis coming into the playoffs because while we had finished the regular season off strongly, you know, there was a still a small chance that they might try and pip us for fourth because if they get results against teams that, you know, the bigger boys like Balk particularly where they have some success, and we can't win a derby apart from beating Balk in the regular season, there is always the chance they would have finished fourth. But I think I can quietly say that we are going to finish fourth now at the very least. And whether Aris turn up against Panathinaikos in the cup or not, I don't know. Fourth place might still be the European spot for whoever does finish fourth. But that's clearly what Aris are just focusing on now. They're just looking forward to get, they're just trying to cause problems for the teams above them, beat Lamia in both games, and then try and win the cup because that could be massive for them as they haven't won a major trophy for a very, very long time.
So I did see, just to correct you, that it's only the top three that get European places for next season. So the coefficient that Greece are fighting for at the moment is not for next season, but the season
Season
afterwards.
after.
So PAOK and Olympiacos in the quarterfinals, if they do get through and do well in the semi-finals, then possibly there'll be four places for 2024, 20 no 2025, 26. But next season, it's definitely one. The first spot gets Champions League qualifying, and then Conference League qualifying for second and third. Which means that even if the title race doesn't go down to four on the last day of the season, there'll still be a third versus fourth sort of battle as well. So that's also a something to keep your eye on.
Well, I more meant that fourth place is a European spot for this season, but whoever if Addis win the cup, then fourth place is no longer a European spot. That's more what I meant. That's apparently been the case all season, I guess. But
True.
yeah, so that yeah, so that's why I was that whoever finishes fourth just has to hope that Addis don't win the cup this season, because then next season they won't be in Europe. But yeah, so now we go into the big game, Alex. So AEK 2-0 up just after the beginning of the second half. So Garsinovic in the 30th minute opened the scoring. Nordin Amrabat scored in the 49th minute. Then just after the hour mark, Baba Rahman scored in the 62nd minute before Ozdiev scored in the 89th minute to make a huge comeback for Balk and to take the to leave AEK with just a point. So very even game by with looking at the stats. He was nine shots apiece. AEK had one less shot, three on target to Balk's four. Possession, you guys had 54% possession, Balk had 46. How did you see this game as an AEK supporter, Alec? What happened? Because you guys looked like you were cruising and then Balk just somehow found a way back at Hagia Sophia.
Game of two halves, Steve. Game of two halves. It was essentially Ike looked so comfortable in the first half and getting the goal as well. It was a beautiful goal too. The pass from Pineda to Garsinovic on the counter attack was so perfectly weighted that Garsinovic just needed to literally pass the ball into the net. It wasn't even right in the corner either, but that's how sort of cutting the pass was from Pineda. And then they score straight after half time. You think, well, there you go, easy job, like 2-0 up at the op up. I mean, there's no other sort of people say it's the most dangerous scoreline in football. That's absolute nonsense. If you're 2-0 up, then you're more than likely going on to win the match. So the fact that Power came back, I mean, I think it was just complacency, if I'm honest. I'm not sure the substitutes helped from Almeida necessarily, but I just think that AK took the foot off the gas and really should have pressed for a third, but instead sort of just said, well, that's it, job done, and let's move on. And then credit to Pauk, to be fair, getting back into it and going right until the very end as well in the 89th minute equalizer. I mean, it's heartbreak for AK fans like myself. But yeah, I guess the positive for the Greek Super League for any neutrals out there is that it keeps the title race super interesting, and still only 4 points separating the top four.
And as you said, it just because of those results, it just makes it that much tighter. And it's just there's six games left, and it's as you said very early on, it's so hard to call because any of those teams could potentially win it. I have been very reserved with people saying Olympiacos in particular to maybe win it because we haven't shown enough in the derbies for me to justify that thought yet. But even like, look, we're 4 points behind, so it's not. It's not impossible. It's very tough for us, probably the maybe slightly tougher than any other team. But I if we do it, then great. I'd be over the moon. But I, as an Olympiacos fan, I'm not saying anything yet. I don't think I can't say because if I say it, I'll jinx it. But look, it's still a really exciting season overall. Just to see everyone beat each other, it's what you want the playoffs to be in terms of this kind of format. As much as I'd love a normal league table format, this is still exciting. It's still really, really cool to see. So we will now go to the table. So Balk, top of the table still on 67 points. AEK just behind on 66. Panathinaikos in third on 65. Olympiakos on 63. Aris on 48 points. Lamia on 34 points. And just to quickly go to the playouts, we'll focus on that quickly. So Adromidos, best of the rest on 33 points. Panathinaikos, joint second with Asteras Tripolis on 31 points. Ophi on 30 points. Volos on 28. Kifisia on 25. Panathinaikos on 24. And Bastia on 19 points with only 3 wins this entire season. So, oh, yes. And
It's not
so
looking good for them. I think
it's
they're
really
doomed,
not.
Steve. I think they're doomed.
The way that they're playing and the way it's going for them and the start they've made, it looks that way. And it's such a shame because Bastianini now, like I said early doors in this podcast, I really liked them like last season and I thought they were doing really, really amazing things despite the budget, despite the team they had on paper. But they have just collapsed completely and real hangover season for them. And it's such a shame. But that's football. If you don't properly prepare, you can get sucked in. So we'll quickly focus on the. We'll quickly preview the games coming this weekend. So Panathinaikos host Ophi, Volos host Dromidos, Bastianina host Asteras, and the big relegation battle match, Kifisia versus Panathinaikos. That would be really, really interesting play out. So we'll keep an eye on them and obviously do our usual full-time scoreline for the playouts. Playoffs, Panathinaikos host Lamia, AEK host Aris. And that's
And
strange.
that's
Why?
it.
That's it.
Postponed the Park Olympiacos match, I think, because of this Thursday.
Yes. I completely missed that. But yes, there's no Olympiacos Balk game, which is a bit of a relief for both teams who are currently in Europe. And it makes sense as well, because I know that initially when the round of 16 games were announced and Olympiacos and Balk requested that their matches be postponed, the Super League Council came back and rejected that proposal. But I'm glad that now that there's a real chance for both those teams, it's good that they've been given that opportunity. So before we move to Europe, actually, Alec, there is something I forgot to talk about with regards to Olympiacos. So I'm sure you saw the news about Alexis Gourgias and what he said after the game against Lamia. So I'll quickly read what Sport 24 said. So he said to Sport 24 that Olympiacos has prepared a lawsuit. There are 55 witnesses. There is 200 pages to this document that they've made. Supposedly, Panathinaikos and Balka on board, which kind of suggests who they are going up against in this sort of massive lawsuit. And they want to try and clean up Greek football, as it were. So it's quite an interesting one because I think it's quite hypocritical of, well, some people see it's quite hip, say it's quite hypocritical that Olympiakos of all teams are trying to clean up Greek football. That's not my opinion necessarily, but that probably is the opinion of other people, and it's fair enough. It is interesting because on the one hand, Gordillas has been running his mouth ever since he became vice president slash legal advisor to Olympiacos. And in that respect, it's a pain in the ass because he's just another Karababa in but if this actually happens, it could be really interesting for Greek football. If they've got the people that they say they've got and the 200-page document to prove the accusations that they're going to put out, and he didn't mention any, he didn't name names because obviously if you name names and accuse that someone of something, you could be sued for defamation, and he doesn't want that, and he doesn't want to put that on Olympiacos or on himself. But it's very obvious who he's accusing, and it's going to be AEK and Mesalenidis because they haven't, they're not the team that has been kind of brought in to sort of help. It's like clean up Greek football. They're clearly the problem that he is suggesting is the issue with Greek football. And I'm not suggesting that, but it's very obvious that that's what Gudyas is suggesting. So I guess not just as an AEK fan, but just as a Greek football fan in general, Alec, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's a bit like an arsonist who goes away and comes back with a water hose and starts spraying the building down and going, "Look, I'm putting out the fire, guys. Look at this." I mean, that's how I see it from an Ike perspective. And to be fair, if Ike have been involved in corruption, they're not doing it very well. I mean, what, like two championships in like over 2 decades? It's not great kind of match fixing if you if that's exactly what Kuyas is referring to. Yeah, we'll see. What I want to read the document. I want to see what Kuyas is actually alleging, all this evidence that he's putting forward. I wonder where he's got it from. I wonder how he's suddenly come into this information now that he's vice president of Olympiacos, or at least appointed by Olympiacos to deal with their legal matters. Yeah, I'm gonna wait and see. I'm gonna wait and see if anything actually concrete comes out of this. And then you've got if there is any sort of wrongdoing on behalf of Ike, then I mean, what do you do to punish them? Do you give them a points deduction for the following season? Do you take their title away? I mean, like, how would you even go about doing that? I mean, I know in the Premier League at the moment we're all sort of discussing PSR rules, and yet Greece is still stuck talking about corruption. So it's a shame that such a great title race as it is right now is sort of being overshadowed by all of these allegations. And I sort of wish that we would focus on the football and kind of look at how great the teams are doing, and look at how great the teams are doing in Europe as well, instead of saying, well, this person said this and this person's alleging this. But unfortunately, the gift that keeps on giving doesn't allow us sometimes just to talk about the football.
Well, that's exactly why the irony, because someone I saw someone say on Facebook when I posted the podcast, they said, why is it the gift that keeps on giving? There's nothing good about it. I'm like, but that's the point. The point is the gift that keeps on giving is the football, but it's also the rubbish that comes with it. That's the point. It's ironic. And I've having explained the joke, that's there's no point in explaining the joke because then it's no longer funny. But there you go. So yeah, it's very I am very intrigued to see how this unfolds. It could nothing could come of it, and I wouldn't be surprised if nothing came of it because, like I said, Gudyas does talk out of his ass, but he's also a very good lawyer, and I think people have forgotten that he has managed to get a lot of things done in his career as a lawyer, and he's very good at it. So if there was anyone that was to try at least try to do something, it's him, and he's very capable. So we shall see about that. So now we will go back to the football. We'll go to the Conference League because quarterfinals are here and they will be played tomorrow. So firstly, we'll go to the early kickoff, Olympiakos versus Fenerbahce from Turkey. So Olympiakos faced Fenerbahce a couple of years ago in the Europa League group stages. We won 3-0 away from home in, well, from in their home. I won't say what it is. And then we took them back to Pirea and won 1-0 with a late goal from Tiquinho Suarez, for people who remember Tiquinho Suarez. So we have a good record against them in recent times, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we will do anything against them this time. It's going to be tough. They have a better team on paper. They have some really solid ex-Premier League pros, as Turkey tends to get from the Prem. And I almost think that for me, I think that almost plays into our hands because we're not the favourites, and I think Olympiacos has always done better, or at least performed better, when we haven't been the favourites in a game like this. And it's our first quarter final in 25 years, so winning tomorrow is vital, especially in Greece. Even though weirdly we've been playing a almost better, slightly better away than we have been at home, but it's the it's sold out crowd in Garayaskagi. It's going to be amazing atmosphere. And as we all know, games between Greek and Turkish teams is very much, it ends up being more than just the football. What are your thoughts on this, Alec?
Yeah, I listened to Gate 7 International's interview with a Turkish journalist whose name escapes me right now. And it was really interesting hearing her talk about how at the moment it would be seen as a massive failure from in Turkish media if Fenerbahce were to be eliminated at the quarterfinal stage, but also that they're more focused on the league this season rather than the Conference League. And they've also had their troubles with scheduling matches and the Turkish Football Federation. I'm sure you heard about their Super Cup debacle where the
Oh, I did.
under-19s left after like 3 minutes, I think it was. And that was in protest to scheduling that match right before the Olympiacos match. Obviously, Olympiacos have got their game with PAOK postponed for the weekend afterwards. So it's interesting to see somehow Greece is ahead of Turkey in that regard.
Which
But
is
if you look
it's
at
an amazing achievement in itself, considering how much of a mess we are. It makes
yeah.
us look organized.
No, I know it's crazy. And you look at their team though, and they got quality like throughout the squad. Even the players that don't play, Cengiz Under, who was at Marseille for 2 or 3 seasons, Fred, who
Poor
apparently is a really
Fred.
key player for them, but he is sort of on the borderline between being past fit and not being past fit. There's a possibility that he will start, and I think if he does, then it will be very difficult for the Olympiacos midfield to get a grip on it. They've got Livakovic, who played Ike for Dynamo Zagreb back in the qualifiers. Also was at the World Cup with Croatia. Edin Dzeko, we don't need to say much more about him, although he is 38 now.
Well, former teammate with Jovetic at Manchester City, so
True.
I'm sure there'll be pictures of them kind of interacting, which would be nice, I guess.
They got Dusan Tadic.
Josh
They've got
King,
Josh King. Yeah, I had no idea. Josh
Ryan
King.
Kent as well.
Yeah, Michy
Yeah.
Batshuayi, and Kalia Soyuncu. So they've got quality everywhere, really, if you look at their team. But like you say, Olympiacos tend to play better away from home than they do in Pireia. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I can see any result. Genuinely, I can see
Yeah,
any
I think
result in this
so.
match.
Like I said, even though they're the favourites, I don't think it's going to be outright as clear-cut as people are making it out to be. And I think we'll give them a good game, especially with how we have been playing with Mendilibar. And we proved against Maccabi Tel Aviv, even though they're not, I can say it now, but they aren't as good a team on paper as Olympiacos. We really struggled with them. We almost got knocked out, and we had to perform an absolute miracle to overcome that. And in Serbia, so that's what's given me the confidence. Like, I'm not saying that Olympiacos is going to breeze past them like we did against Maccabi, but I think that we stand a chance, and more of a chance than maybe some people are giving us. Despite the fact that Fenerbahce have some good players on paper.
But they're a good team on the pitch as well. Like not just on paper. You look at the Turkish Super League right now. They're
They've lost one.
second,
They've lost
but
one game as
only
well.
one game. Yeah, they're 2 points off Galatasaray in first. 82 points from 31 matches. I mean, you look at that. I mean, they're a serious football team. If Olympiacos can get one over on them over 2 legs, I think that really shows the quality of Greek football right now, given that Olympiacos are in fourth place. It's going to be a super tough game, and I just hope that you don't have the same thing that happened in your last match against was it Maccabi Tel Aviv, and just completely capitulate at home, because that was just so damaging. And I know it led obviously to the miracle in Israel, but you don't want to give yourself a mountain to climb like you did back then.
No, definitely not, because I don't think we'd be capable of doing that against a more experienced team like Fenerbahce in Europe. And like you said, I know that, Maccabi Tel Aviv themselves were doing really well in Israel before we faced them. I think they're still top of their league, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, this is a different This is a different kind of competition. Well, not competition. I'm losing my words here. It's a different prospect altogether, and it's going to be tough, but I'm hopeful. Moving on to the later fixture, Balk travel to Belgium to play Club Bruges or Club Brugge, depending on your pronunciation. And this was one that my friend is a well, I have a friend who's a Club Bruges supporter, and so he'll definitely be messaging me and shouting down the phone if Club Bruges qualify for the semi-finals of the Conference League. But for Balk, it's not as tough a prospect as Olympiacos, but it's not the easiest either. I mean, at this point, no team is easy in the quarterfinals of a major UEFA competition, and they haven't had the best of seasons, but they have started to pick up form a little bit now in Belgium. With the playoffs and how their system works, they are clawing back kind of that massive lead that Union Saint-Gilloise had, and they're kind of bottling the league again as they have done for the last couple of years. So Club Bruges is a tough prospect for Balk. I think the fact that they're away, first leg, ironically, I think plays into Balk's hands a little bit, because like as we saw in when they played Dynamo Zagreb, that it, they lost, I think they lost away from home, and then they came back to Dunbar and won, where they've been very good in Europe. So it's going to be a very interesting. How do you see this one, Alec?
Yeah, you say that they're in good form, but I mean their last 12 matches, they've only won 5 times, and they've lost 4 times in that period as well. They're definitely not the Club Bruges that you might remember from a few seasons ago, where they were dominating the league every single year. They have been very inconsistent. However, really recent form they
Yeah,
are
that's
in.
more what I meant. They're really recent form has
Yeah,
improved.
so against Anderlecht, for example, which is, you know, the big one. They won 3-1, played really well, having just seen the highlights of that match. And they've again got really exciting and dangerous attacking talents. The one thing is, I think Andreas Skovolsen, from Denmark, who is sort of their one of their talismans,
Yes.
he is sort of touch and go whether he will play. Likewise, I think with Simon Mignolet, who we all remember from Liverpool. But you are right that they aren't the same level as Fenerbahce. I mean, just given the fact that Philipp Zinkernagel has played 30 games this season, probably tells you that they're not on the same level. But having said all of that, they are a team that has decent European pedigree. They've only lost at home once this season, which I think tells you all you need to know that it's going to be a really tough game tomorrow for Park. Away from home, their form is really patchy, actually, and they've kind of drawn and lost approximately the same amount as they've won away from home. So I think any result which is sort of puts Pauk within touching distance. Even a one sort of goal disadvantage going back to Tumba, I think would be a decent result. A draw is great. A win is unbelievable. But yeah, temper your expectations because they are very good at home. And the only match that they've lost at home this season was to Anderlecht, and that was only by 2-1. So you can see it's going to be a really tough game for Park, as it will be for Olympiacos. And I'm just hoping that the boys get the job done.
Yeah, because I think we spoke about it in the chat with Elaine, who's more in touch with kind of how the point system works with the UEFA coefficient for individual teams now and for nations as well. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think if d both teams don't have to qualify for Greece to secure 15th place, I think either one of them or both teams have to at least win one of their two legs in this tie for Greece to then have either a very good chance or more or less secure 15th place. If I'm wrong, Elaine will probably correct me after this podcast goes out, but I don't think both Greek clubs actually have to qualify for the semi-finals to get 15th place, but it'd be great to have at least one, because then there's a chance of 14th and higher, and that could be massive considering how down in the dumps the Greek coefficient has been for the last few years.
So just on that, I think, although I could be mistaken, it's 6 wins. I think we need 6 wins. to make it. It might be four actually, having after a couple of weeks ago. But essentially, yeah, at least one team needs to get to the semi-finals for Greece to have a chance of 15th.
Okay.
Both would be even better. And then obviously you still need to win at least one of the legs in the semi-finals, depending on what happens. I think because there is another team as well still fighting for 15th, another country, sorry, still fighting for 15th, but I'm not quite sure who they are right now.
I'll check
I'll have a
now.
look while we speak. But yeah, I mean, after the first legs with Olympiakos and PAOK, I was like, well, that's it. That's it. Again, another th only three teams in European competitions for Greece for the next two seasons, and that's just obviously quite depressing when you see how strong the top four are in Greece. And I think the top four do deserve to be in Europe given their quality, because I mean, if you think about it, Olympiakos have a really good chance of winning the league this season, but they've also got a chance of not being in Europe this season,
Which is
next
crazy.
season, which, yeah, I don't, it shouldn't be like that. And it's been slowly creeping up the sort of the quality of the Greek league and the quality of the top four teams, and having the top four teams there plus Aris as well, I think has been super healthy. Obviously you go back to sort of 2014, and AEK were relegated, and Aris were relegated as well. I think it's made it super more competitive. That's not a phrase, is it, Steve?
Supermarket.
Super more competitive. So yeah, I'm hoping that PAOK and Olympiakos can do Greece a solid.
Looking at the coefficient, I think this is for this season. It is. So Greece have two teams still in Europe, obviously, and they're currently sitting 17th. No one between 16th and 12th have a team remaining in European competition. The next team that has a team has a, the next nation that has a team in Europe right now is the Czech Republic. And that's with Victoria Pilsen, who are in the Conference League. After that, obviously, you have Turkey, you have Fenerbahce, you have Belgium, sorry, you have Club Brugge, and you have Portugal as well, who have a team in Europe who I can't remember at the moment. But yeah, so Greece are pretty on their own at the moment. And so they have 20, they have 29.525 points, and then Israel, who are obviously knocked out, have 31.125 points. Denmark in 15th have 31.425 points. So it's close.
It's
It's
close.
very, very close. So Greece have pretty much free rein to just make sure they, like you said, at least get one team into the semi-finals, if that's possible, to then try and secure 15th place, which would be massive for the next couple seasons going forward for Greek football. And hopefully it's something to build on as well, because this cannot be a one-off. This cannot be a situation where we have one amazing kind of season where loads of Greek teams do well in Europe or qualify for Europe, as was with AEK and Panathinaikos, and then next season it just go back to the status quo where it's just Olympiakos, or it's just Olympiakos and PAOK, or it's neither of those teams, and it's just one other team as well. And so I really hope that this is a, like you said, the Greek teams have finally learned how to get a bit more consistent European pedigree and push forward to becoming just a stronger nation in European competition in general. But yeah, that's if there's any last thoughts on Europe before we move on.
Just one last thing. I think it has been underrated how good a season it has been for Greek clubs in European competitions. I'm looking at it right now, and the coefficient points that Greece have got this season is comparable to the Netherlands right now. They've got 10,000, and Greece have got 9,400, or 9.4 and 10. And it, like, way more than Scotland have, almost double the Swiss league, more than double the Austrian league, more than Norway, more than Denmark, more than Israel. It's been a really good season for Greek clubs in Europe, and long may that continue.
Fully. I'm really, really, like I said, I'm really pleased. And also the Conference League has been a massive help for the Greek coefficient. That, you know, I know that only in recent times in the UK, people have kind of stopped turning their nose up at it because West Ham won it. But this competition was made for clubs like Greece. And that's not downplaying Greek clubs, saying that we don't deserve Champions League, we don't deserve Europa League. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying it gives that third competition for us to actually progress and make our coefficient better, make our teams more competitive, and then we can start competing in the Europa League more consistently. Then Maybe, as despite the fact the Champions is becoming so elitist, even for teams in the top 10, let alone the top like the top 20 leagues in UEFA competitions. But it just makes us a more competitive nation overall in Europe, and that's a good thing, and long may it continue, as you said. So there's not too much else to talk about, really, Alec. I mean, the last thing I want to mention for today is we said, I think it was either last week or week before, Banyoni Oz were on the verge of returning to the Super League 2 after a long kind of period in the lower leagues of Greek football and the amateur leagues. And they've finally done it. They were crowned champions last weekend on Sunday, I believe it was. And so they are now officially back in Super League 2. They are back in the professional leagues. They are back in kind of a better level of Greek football than they have been in recent times. So that's a massive win for Greek football in general, because Banyoni Oz, as we keep saying, hugely historical club, hugely important club for Greek football, with some of the players they've produced over the decades. So it's really, really good to see them back in Super League 2, and hopefully even in the very near future we'll see them back in the Super League proper as well. That'd be really, really good.
Just on that, if people aren't aware, the Panionios are a really historic club in Greece. I mean, they competed in the 1947 season when the Greek league was still sort of a fledgling league in Europe, and they came second in 1951. They've won two Greek cups, I believe, and they've got to the final, I think, six times. And they were in the Super League, well, the Alpha Ethniki, as it was, for decades and decades and decades, only getting relegated once in 1997. And even as recently as 2019, we're in sixth spot. So Panionios a massive Greek club, and they deserve really to be in the Super League, as do quite a few teams down there. I mean, you've got really historic teams like Ethnikos Pireus, you've got
Heracles as well.
Smyrni, you've got Doxa Dramas, Kastoria, Panathinaikos, of course. You've got so
Yes.
many really big clubs down there, it's sort of a shame that there's only 14 teams in the Greek Super League. I think it sort of precludes so many really big clubs from being in there, and that's without even mentioning teams like Ergotelis and Olympiakos Volos and Niki Volos, and all of these massive clubs that really should have a an opportunity to be on the big stage.
Well, hopefully with the league strengthening, hopefully that, and with kind of less financial constraints, less financial issues, that will give the Super League and maybe Ebor the confidence to maybe expand the league later down the line. I don't know if that would mean sacrificing the playoffs if we went to 16 teams again. I personally, even though like I keep saying, the playoffs have been amazing this season, but I would still sacrifice that to have a bigger league and have a healthier league. But that's only if teams don't go down because they can't financially support themselves. Because I remember 10 years ago, even when teams would just have to be forced relegated because they couldn't afford to be there. But it's a very different landscape in Greek football now. And I like I said, it would be nice to see teams like Larissa, Banyonios, Heracles, and all the other ones you mentioned, Alec, to kind of start progressing back to at least Super League 2, so that they can then try and make it to into the Super League, because it makes the league more exciting to have all these historical clubs back. It was kind of like when, it's kind of like when Nottingham Forest and Leeds came up, or and they were all in the same division in the Premier League. It was kind of a very vintage looking table to see all of those kind of old school teams that have won things before football began in 1992 to sort of be there and be back in the top division. So I hopefully that happens with Greek football too. But other than that, I think that is pretty much it for today. There's maybe one or two things we've missed, but it's okay. We'll try and mention them next time. But yeah, if there's any last thoughts you want to give, Alec, before we sign off.
No, that's it. I'm really excited for tomorrow, and I love the fact that you've got one game on at 5:45 in the UK, and then one game on at I think it's 8 o'clock or 7:45, meaning you can watch both, which is a really big bonus. I'll be watching the Liverpool match as well at
Yes.
8 o'clock too, so I've got my two screens ready. It's if you've never tried it, Steve, watching two games at once is quite an experience. I would definitely recommend.
I've done it for internationals. I did it once for when Cyprus played a game, when Greece played a game, and That was really, really tough. The worst one for me is actually when Cyprus and Greece played each other, and I did a full match report because I reported on both teams, so I had to make sure I knew what both teams were doing, and it was like the weirdest experience I've ever had. I came just ended the game just in an absolute sweat because I had to try and keep up with what both like 24 players were doing on the pitch.
Thanks for reminding everyone about the
Me too.
FDQ, by the way.
Well, I haven't mentioned any. Well, look, just to, I mean, I will quickly say that Christian, one of our writers for Hellas Football, has written a piece on kind of the Greek national team going forward and the depth that we have, and most importantly, who the next manager could be. And so give it a read. It's quite a good one. And it does raise a lot of questions because obviously we still don't know who the national team manager will be. We don't know if we'll have an FDG boss by the time there's a Germ the friendly in Germany happens. It might be an interim coach because obviously there's going to be massive changes with the Greek Football Federation with elections. So we will keep you posted on that though when news breaks. But yes, thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, give us a follow on X, on Facebook, on Instagram if you haven't already, and keep support. We really appreciate the support you give us on all our posts. And if you haven't given us a 5-star review on the podcast yet, do so because it helps us get up there in the charts and helps us kind of get more listenership. And if someone who you know is a big fan of Greek football and needs a podcast, wants to give us a listen, then send it their way. And if they don't care about Greek football, send it to them anyway, see if they give a crap about listening to it. But yeah, thank you so much, Alec, for joining me today.
Thanks, Steve.
And we will catch you next week after Europe and after the Super League. Catch you guys then.